Welcome back to the What Do They Know podcast. This week, the guys discuss the MVP race and the firing of Matt Eberflus. They will also discuss which teams could land the number one pick in the 2025 draft and the Dolphins' inability to play in the cold weather. But hey, what do they know?
What do they know? Well, we are about to find out. Welcome back to week 13. Week 13 on the What Do They Know podcast. Nick and Jeff back with you virtually again. Ironing out some continuous technical difficulties, and we'll be back together ideally next week. Will you be here still? You go on vacation soon.
Yeah, in 2.5 weeks. Okay. So we got two Sundays.
We got a couple more episodes. So, all right, week 13 in the books. The Jets still suck, but that's not my top story. So I will let you kick it off with top stories.
Okay. Well, speaking of another team that sucks, the Dolphins. We were biting the bullet, we were biting the cheese, we were doing the whole shebang last week, and they just put up a goose egg on Thanksgiving with against the Packers. Obviously, the storylines with them playing in the cold is not unfamiliar to us. Obviously, we thought they were heading in the right direction, but no, they just put up their offense was just a no-show for the most part. The run game wasn't doing what it needed to do. Their passing game stalled, as it does in cold weather. And just the formula against winning teams is just not happening right now. They're like on an 8-game losing streak against teams with a winning record. So they're the most mid team, the most predictable team you can conjure up when you think about mid teams. They beat the bad teams, they lose to the good ones. There's no secret about it. But yeah, the Dolphins. I'm starting to look at Mike McDaniels as he the guy? Is he going to be the one that's going to take the Dolphins to the promised land, or is he going to be another Cliff Kingsbury where he's just better off being an offensive coordinator?
Yeah, I mean, because he likes to frame it. The last couple of times people have brought this up to him and say, like, oh, you guys can't play in cold weather, you can't beat good teams, et cetera, et cetera. He likes to frame it like it's just a narrative and like it doesn't necessarily mean anything. And that's right. His whole thing is like, oh, it's just a narrative, I can't wait to change that, blah, blah, blah. Well, how long can you just call it a narrative before it becomes like a fact? Like,
right,
you can't beat good teams and you can't play in cold weather. I think they said during the broadcast they were 0-8 in their last 8 games where the temperature at kickoff was below 40 degrees.
Yeah.
Something like that. Like, it might have been even worse than 0-8, honestly. I just remember it was a very, very staggering difference.
Yeah.
When they kick off in cold weather. So, like, it's ridiculous. And I know I heard on the radio this week that somebody asked Mike Tannenbaum, former GM, like, when you drafted, because he used to be the GM for Miami years ago, and he said, when you were bringing players over, did you account for cold weather at all? And he kind of laughed at the question, like you can't bring people on your team based on how you think they're going to play in cold weather, at least in my opinion. Like, that's not a thing. But right. I mean, I don't know what they do to change that. I mean, Tua's numbers, I feel like they weren't bad, but I feel like maybe they were inflated a little bit. I mean, he threw for 350 yards, I think, and 2 touchdowns. But they didn't do it when they needed to. They couldn't get the big play. I was really surprised, honestly, with the result. Obviously, like you said, we've been all over the Dolphins the last couple weeks, and you know that. I guess this is why they're a below 500 team, because just when they reel you in, you know, they play like who they are, and
right,
they're a below 500 team.
Right, and if you're a Miami fan, do you even want them to make the playoffs? Because if you make the playoffs, all of a sudden you're traveling to Baltimore, you're traveling to Kansas City or Buffalo, and those are not good stadiums for a team like the Dolphins to perform in. Obviously, we saw what happened last year in Kansas City with them, but yeah, for the Dolphins, it's tough sledding if it's not in Miami. But yeah, moving on to my second top story, it's the race for the number one overall pick. And the race is on, basically. Right now, the Giants, the Jags, and the Raiders are all 2-10. I believe the Jags hold the tiebreaker there, withholding the number one overall pick. Honestly, if I'm the Jags, do you even look at taking a quarterback number one overall? You take a look at picking Shoulder Sanders there at number one overall, or maybe you look at Travis Hunter a little bit better. Or do you just trade for assets? And obviously Trevor Lawrence, I think you saw like what I saw. He kind of got nailed.
Dude got like buried.
Lit up in the most intense degree. It was a pretty intense hit. Honestly, I'd probably shut him down for the rest of the year. That's you paid him the money. You might as well save him for next year and see what happens. But overall, if I'm looking at those three teams right now, obviously you have the Panthers, and then obviously the Jets, some teams with three wins right beneath them. But if I'm the Giants or the Raiders, yeah, I'm probably taking a QB. If I'm the Jags, probably not.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a whole conversation within the conversation, like who gets the number one pick, but then also who you're going to take, because Deion Sanders has already made it abundantly clear that he's only going to let his son be drafted and go play for certain teams. So, I mean, he put the list out there. I don't know it off the top of my head. I think Vegas right. was on there. I think the Cowboys were on there. Vegas surprised me just because of, you know, it's Vegas and they're typically not very good, but
right.
I mean, so like the Giants, I know the Giants were not on there. So like, if you're the Giants, do you want to go and, you know, suck for Shador, so to speak, when he may pull an Eli and not want to play for you? So I think that's kind of going to be curious as we get the draft order kind of locked in, and then we know what players are going to probably be projected where, because Shador Sanders deciding that he may not play for somebody mm-hmm. could really change things up. And I don't know if you really would want the number one pick if he says he's not going to play for your team.
Yeah, honestly, this is the problem I kind of have. Like, I love Deion, and yeah. I think he brings a lot of great energy. But I feel like there's so much drama in the background with him and his family. It kind of reminds me of the whole Lonzo Ball.
Oh, yeah.
Big saga time. Back in the day. It's just one of those things, like you should just be grateful that your child is in the NFL, period. Shouldn't really matter where he's going. Obviously, I guess as a parent, you do realize which franchises are maybe a little lackluster and yeah. and kind of dysfunctional, but at the same time, I think it's an opportunity to show out your skills there. For Shador, I don't care who I'm going to. Just pick me at number one overall, pay me my money, and I'm there for you. But overall, obviously, the Giants playing colder weather. Vegas, I mean, that's closer to home if Deion's going to stick at Colorado long term. But for me, honestly, I'd probably even look elsewhere. I mean, Travis Hunter is a dual threat. I don't know if he's going to keep that up in the NFL league. I doubt it.
I'd be surprised.
And what position he's going to convert to, whether that's a full-time wide receiver or full-time quarterback, I don't know. But obviously you have a quarterback in Alabama, Milroe?
Yeah, Jalen Milroe, yep.
Yep, and some yep. other talent around there. So
yeah.
Honestly, it can be a whole saga with Shador. And honestly, I probably wouldn't even get involved with that, to be honest.
That's what I was just going to say. As like a team that, as a fan of a team that could potentially be drafting high and potentially need a quarterback, I wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole.
Right.
I just have seen too many things from him. Like last week against Kansas, he pushed the ref, like literally physically pushed him. There was a clip a couple weeks ago of a ball boy from another school, taking the ball or picking it up after like a touchdown celebration, and then Shador wanted it back and he like got in his face and was like getting ready to fight the kid. Like, he just to me, he just it looks like an absolute punk. Everything that I've seen, and now knowing like that he's gonna, you know, supposedly dictate where he plays, I don't want anything to do with him personally,
right?
So I would avoid him like the plague if I was a GM. I know his talent is gonna like bring some people in, and I'm sure there's gonna be a big market for him. But I'm not in that market personally.
Right, same here.
Yep.
All right.
all right. So my top story is Matt Eberflus, and him obviously being fired on Friday from the Chicago Bears, after one of the most inexplicable coaching blunders of clock management I've ever seen. I mean, I think you had already left Thanksgiving at this point, right? You weren't still there. So, yeah. I mean, we were all in the room, like, what is happening? Like, I think we were literally yelling at the TV, like, call the timeout. So, for those who may not have watched it, I mean, the Bears were driving. They needed a field goal. They were in field goal range. I want to say they were on, like, the 30, 35-yard line. Caleb Williams ended up getting sacked with 30. So, I went back and looked today. He got sacked with 33 seconds left. Still, I think, on the 40. So, you know, fringe field goal range.
Right.
Timeout. So by the time they got up, got set, called their play, you know, he read the defense, whatever he was doing, they snapped the ball with 6 seconds left, and it ended up being essentially a Hail Mary that was incomplete, and they lost the game, and they never used the one timeout.
Right.
So, I mean, inexcusable, like, ridiculous clock management. Like, and then I think to make matters worse, in my opinion, like, after the game and even the next day, he just completely just didn't own it.
Yeah, like, that was the botch.
That was the worst part. Was like, I think we handled it. We handled it the way we wanted to. We were in the situation we wanted to be in. We just didn't execute. Really, right. Dude? Like, I was completely baffled by obviously what happened, but more importantly, like, his response or just lack of accountability. Because like, if it was a player that had messed up, you better believe that they're expected to own it. And right. I mean, he just didn't. And I mean, he's had multiple coaching blunders this year. The other most notable one is not guarding the boundary against Washington right before the Hail Mary. Gave them an easy like 5 yard, 10 yard out to let them even get into Hail Mary range.
Right.
He didn't do that. Excuse me. And so, I mean, there's just thing time after time. And Keenan Allen after the game said, we as players played well enough to win. And I feel like that was very telling. Like, we as players did well enough, but obviously the coaches did not.
Right.
Or one particular coach. So I don't know, man. I don't know where the Bears go from here. I mean, Matt Eberflus is a story in itself, but the Bears, like, you know, them and developing Caleb Williams is kind of its own separate story, because now the guy who was already the interim offensive coordinator, and I'm blanking on his name currently, but he's now the interim head coach.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Caleb Williams was kind of meshing, kind of playing really well since this new offensive coordinator took over. Now is he going to have that one-on-one relationship like he did now that he's the head coach? It's a mess.
Right. Well, I mean, looking at the replay, I kind of understood in a weird conceptual way what they were doing. They were going to try to do a quick out route, probably get it into field goal range and get the chunk yardage that you lost from the sack. And then with like 3 seconds left, maybe call a timeout, kick the field goal, go into overtime, whatever. I got it. My thing was, you have a rookie QB. You know you have a rookie QB. And it showed. I mean, Caleb Williams reading the defense and adjusting plays as time was winding down. I think he was still reading the defense with like 10 seconds left. At that point, you're like, man.
Yeah, he was clueless. He was clueless as to what was going on.
Yeah, there's no way you could rely on Caleb Williams to read the defense that fast and try to get a chunk play. I mean, obviously, Caleb Williams threw the ball downfield 30 yards down the field for no reason. He should have just taken the out, throw it out of bounds if there's nothing there, and then let your head coach decide what to do from there. But yeah, at the end of the day, my biggest thing was the answer the next day. That to me was the nail in the coffin. That was the botch. That was the fumble. And honestly, I question if Matt Eberflus knew what he was doing when he said that, because there are times where I feel like head coaches kind of see the writing on the wall and they're just like, just get me out of here at this point. Yeah. And I feel like Matt Eberflus said like, nope, we were good. Well, what we did was perfectly fine. And it's those sort of examples that I referred to when I look at a head coach that knows his time is coming and just wants an out as soon as possible. But yeah, like you said, Matt Eberflus has had a history with this during his tenure with Chicago. And this continues a trend for Chicago drafting a QB and then firing their head coach that same season. We saw it with Matt Trubisky and then Justin Fields. I can't remember the head coaches that got fired.
Matt Nagy was with Justin Fields.
Yep.
And then Trubisky, I couldn't tell you.
I can't remember his first name, but wasn't it Fox? He used to coach the Panthers. I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
But yeah, the name is slipping. But yeah, I mean, 2017, 2021, and 2024, all head coaches getting fired after their QB got drafted. So, I mean, it continues a bad trend for Chicago. Obviously, you hope that the same trajectory for Caleb Williams doesn't happen, what happened with Trubisky and Justin Fields. But yeah, at this point, if you're Chicago, I honestly don't know where you go. I don't know if you hire internally, like you said, the offensive coordinator. We'll see if there's any improvements there with Caleb Williams continuing his stellar play. Or if you look outside, and then what do you do with your interim head coach now? Do you relegate him back to offensive coordinator? I don't know. I really don't know. But yeah, Chicago definitely has a lot of questions to answer during the offseason, and it just doesn't seem to be working out regardless of what they do.
Yeah, and I mean the big issue to begin with is that they should have fired Eberflus before the season. I mean,
yeah.
Because now, I mean, you have a rookie, you want to put your coach and your quarterback on the same timeline. So you're bringing in a new quarterback, you want to bring in a new coach. Not only did they not fire him, but they left him on, and I think this was the last year of his extension. I don't think he was under contract after this year. So they didn't extend him, they didn't fire him. Like, it was almost like the writing was on the wall. Like, it was bound to happen.
Yeah.
So I think that was their mistake, was just not making the change in the offseason. And now they put themselves in a really tough spot. And this is just another offensive playbook now that Caleb Williams is going to have to learn whoever the new offensive coordinator is, whenever they come in, it's just a new set of plays.
Right.
So it's just not a fun place to be in. And I can somewhat relate to that dysfunction.
All right. I got you.
My second story, you brought up draft position. It's kind of similar. You know, we talk about the MVP race right around now as well.
Right.
And I'm really curious to get your take. I know we had a lot of reaction, a lot of commentary last year on this topic when we brought it up. So I wrote down four players that I think could get MVP votes right now. So Lamar, right? Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Jared Goff,
okay,
and Saquon Barkley.
Yep.
Those are the four that I think will get talked about for the remainder of the season. Someone could maybe sneak in there, sure. Do you think I'm leaving anybody out? First of all.
Not off the top of my head. Honestly, Josh Allen and Saquon were my top two picks on MVP so far.
Yeah, and I think it's such an interesting, and we talked about this last year, so it's gonna be a little repetitive, but it's such an interesting topic because everybody views MVP differently.
Right.
Like one of the guys on ESPN radio, Evan Cohen, he said that he doesn't have a vote, but if he did have a vote, he said it would be physically impossible for him to vote for anybody besides the quarterback because it's the most important position.
Yeah,
but
I get it,
and I get that to an extent. Where I always go back to is, regardless of position, is remove that player and what does that team look like?
Yeah,
that's the MVP to me. Like, how does that team function? How do they look if you remove that player from the equation?
Right.
So for me, that eliminates Saquon, because I still think the Eagles are going to be good. They might not be as dynamic, but they're still going to be very good. So for me, Saquon is out. As of right now, I know what he's doing is amazing, but I mean, they've had good to great running backs the last like 2 or 3 years. For me, I think it would be Josh Allen right now. I think if you take Josh Allen off of Buffalo, they could be terrible. I truly think that if you put somebody else at the quarterback position on Buffalo, they are not good.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, Josh Allen is the MVP right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with Josh Allen, take 100%. He's definitely my number one betting favorite to win MVP so far. Like you said, if you take Josh Allen off that team, with the talent that they have at wide receiver right now, even before Amari Cooper, that would be hard for a quarterback to move the football down the field in any capacity. It'd definitely be more of a James Cook show there in Buffalo than what we see now. But yeah, Josh Allen is done Josh Allen things. He's very, I wouldn't say overlooked, but I feel like underappreciated because of Patrick Mahomes there in the AFC. But going back to the Saquon take, I honestly gotta disagree with you on the Saquon take, because I feel like if you take Saquon off the Eagles, they turn into last year's Eagles, and I feel like we saw what happened with last year's Eagles. They finished 1-6 and got trounced in the playoffs. I feel like Saquon definitely makes that team a lot more dynamic and transcends that offense into more of a lethal, complete gel state where he's the gum and everyone just sticks around what Saquon is doing, and he elevates that football team both on the field and morally off the field. So I feel like Saquon is definitely worth the money that they paid him in the offseason, and I feel like he's definitely earned his right to be there in the MVP race. But I mean, he's my number two pick right now. Jared Goff, obviously, has had a stellar year. The number one knock I would have on Jared Goff is he had that 5-interception game, and Lions still won anyway. Yeah. So I feel like I refer to that, and I feel like the Lions are just too complete of a team for to say Jared Goff is, if you take Jared Goff away, what are they? They're still a pretty good team.
And I kind of think with the Lions that they kind of have a system that a lot of quarterbacks could be successful in.
Yeah.
Like if you swap Jared Goff with, I mean, another quarterback, I think their numbers are going to be just as good, because I think that they, to your point, like they have everything. They have an offensive line. They have receivers. They have running backs. They have a great offensive coordinator. Like, it's not a Jared Goff thing. Like,
right,
kind of similar to the Brock Purdy argument last year.
Yeah. I would definitely say Jared Goff is a rich man's Brock Purdy.
Yeah.
I would definitely say Jared Goff's a little bit more on a higher tier than Brock Purdy. But yeah, I mean, kudos to Jared Goff. He got himself out of a situation there in LA. They got traded 1-for-1, Matthew Stafford and Jared Goff, and he's done nothing but excel over there in Detroit.
Yep.
And he's put that entire city on his back.
He was a salary dump. Like yeah. Detroit didn't, I don't care what they say, Detroit did not want him. They took him on to facilitate that trade. And they cashed in big time. So it's not like he went to Detroit as somebody that they were targeting.
Yeah, I feel like he was going to be a bridge quarterback to whoever they were going to have, but it just worked out in the end for them.
It worked out terrifically. Yeah.
Yep. But that's my MVP take.
Yeah, I think it's curious to see. I mean, obviously the Ravens lost today, so I feel like anytime the player loses, then they immediately take a step back in the MVP race. So
yeah, we'll see.
I mean, who knows? Josh Allen's about to start here in a few minutes on Sunday Night Football. It's a primetime game, so if he goes off tonight, I'm sure the narrative tomorrow will be, oh, he's the runaway MVP.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't know. It's a very curious conversation, because everybody views what MVP means so differently.
Right. Yeah. No, but I'm more on your boat. If you take the player off the team, what does that team look like? I like to look a little bit more off the field as well. And that's why I like Saquon Barkley so much, because I feel like the Eagles just fell apart last year. And I don't think that that's going to happen this year. But the same thing goes with Josh Allen. He's definitely the leader there in Buffalo. And if you take away Josh Allen's personality from that team, all of a sudden, like you said, that might be a very bad team there in Buffalo.
Yeah, agreed. All right. Overreactions this week. What do you got?
All right. So overreactions. My first one, I think it's an overreaction, but we'll go with when he retires, Mike Tomlin will be known as the greatest Steelers head coach of all time. Oof. And this is coming off of Chuck Knoll and Bill Cowher. Obviously, they've had three head coaches over the past, 60 years or something? Something ridiculous like that. And obviously, Chuck Knoll has four Super Bowl wins. Bill Cowher's got the one, and Tomlin has the one. But Mike Tomlin, he'll probably have the most wins in franchise history. He has the highest winning percentage right now for the Steelers. To me, Mike Tomlin just secured another winning season there in Pittsburgh. To me, the man can do no wrong, basically, right. Tomlin. So, but I mean, it's a high pedestal to knock off Chuck Knoll with four Super Bowl wins. Obviously, I feel like Mike Tomlin needs to win at least one or two more just to be in that conversation. But I feel like Tomlin is definitely in the right trajectory if he decides to coach long enough to be there.
Yeah, I mean, this could be recency bias, but like I could see someone ranking him above Cowher.
Yeah, I would.
But Chuck Knoll, I think just because of the Super Bowls, you have to put him above Tomlin. But I mean, I don't think either one of us could be. I mean, short of being a Steelers fan, like I don't think there are bigger Mike Tomlin fans than the two of us. Like we worship this dude. Like he is such a good coach, such a good leader of men. And like what he did this year, I mean, every single year we point to something that he did that is just stupid impressive. And this year it was having the foresight and the discipline to still make the switch to Russell Wilson when Justin Fields was 4-2. Was it 4-2? I think.
Yeah. So yeah.
I mean, they were 4-2. They weren't playing bad. He still made the switch to Russell Wilson, and now look at him.
Yeah. I mean, excuse me. That's a guy who cares nothing about what anyone else is saying. He knows what he's doing.
Right. Right.
So, like, we can come on here. We could probably have a whole entire show about Mike Tomlin. And that's the thing. The thing with it is now, I don't know when Mike Tomlin is going to retire. I feel like there was, like, rumors about him retiring or getting fired from Pittsburgh
last year. Yeah.
So you never know. But I mean, I feel like he just goes out and silences doubters without even knowing he has doubters in the first place. He doesn't care about that stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what impresses me the most about Mike Tomlin. But yeah, Chuck Knoll is definitely he has 193 wins. Chuck Knoll does, and four Super Bowls. That's something that's going to be a little almost insurmountable unless Tomlin reels off a couple Super Bowls in the next handful of years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yep. And then my next overreaction, Trey Lance is the worst quarterback in the league. We have not seen that man since he got traded to Dallas for a fourth round pick. I don't know what Dallas is doing. I don't know why they do not want to put that dude on the field. But Trey Lance is the worst quarterback in the NFL if they are not letting him play.
He's got to be, right? He's right. Got to be atrocious. Like, for them not to just take a shot and see what they have when,
right.
I mean, everybody, I think, except for the Cowboys, knows that they're out of it. Like, yeah. And I think at the end of the day, that's probably part of the problem is because Jerry Jones is just in denial that they're not going to make the playoffs and that they're not a good team.
Yeah.
But, like that, yes, that's been the talk for the last like 2 or 3 weeks all over sports radio. It's like, why did you trade for this guy?
Right. Exactly. I'm not understanding. I mean, you're putting out Cooper Rush. They signed him this offseason to what, a 2-year deal or something?
I believe so. Yeah.
But so at the same time, Cooper Rush went out there and averaged like a little over 5 yards per pass against a defense that's not really that stingy against the pass. I think the Giants were allowing over 9 yards per pass attempt against them. So, I mean, Cooper Rush is a decent backup, but at some point, the Dallas Cowboys have to see the writing on the wall. Mike McCarthy has to know, hey, this team is not going to make the playoffs. So let's just try out Trey Lance and see what we've got. We spent a fourth round pick on him. Right. I mean, there's no reason to not put him in the field and see what he can do. To me, it's crazy. There's nothing else I can say about it.
Like, I still don't totally understand what happened.
Yeah.
Like my memory, my recollection could be totally incorrect, but I remember him obviously coming in when Garoppolo got hurt, not being bad.
Right.
He was okay at worst. Like he wasn't, nobody was talking like, oh my gosh, what a disaster. He's a bust. Like he was a mobile quarterback. He was scrambling around. He was making plays. And then he broke his ankle.
Mm-hmm.
Brock Purdy happened. And then all of a sudden, Trey Lance is the worst.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand how we went from there to there. Like, I would be totally okay if the Jets, like, traded, like, a seventh for him. And, like, jotted him out as the week one starter next week, like, or next year. I'd be okay with it. Because, like, I he was drafted third overall for a reason. He wasn't bad when he played, and now all of a sudden, the league has decided that he's terrible.
Yeah,
I don't understand it.
I don't get it either. This is why I brought it up, because we talked about Trey Lance at a premium last year because of the whole San Francisco situation, and then during the off season, but this year, not a peep, nothing. No, I haven't heard a thing about Trey Lance, and. At this point, with Dak Prescott being injured and sitting out the few games that he has, if you're Dallas, you need to start seeing what you got and see what you're going to do in the future. Because Cooper Rush, although he might be a decent backup QB, he is not going to lead you to the promised land in any sort of fashion. No offense to Cooper Rush, but at the same time, you spent a fourth round pick on Trey Lance. Put the guy out there. If he throws six interceptions, I don't care. Go out there and do it.
Yeah.
Prove it to me that you can throw six interceptions at this point. So, but like you said, I have no idea how we got from point A to point Z. We completely missed point B from point to point Y. There's nothing there that really says anything. I don't know if it's an attitude problem. I don't know if it's a locker room thing, but at that point, if it is, why aren't you cutting the guy? Why is he still on the team? But I just wanted to bring some spotlight back to Trey Lance.
Yeah, I'm with you. And the thing I keep coming back to is, like, you know, these teams see him practice every day.
Yeah.
He must be dreadful. I don't know. That's all I can say about that.
Oh, goodness.
All right. So my first overreaction, Kirk Cousins will be one and done in Atlanta.
Oof.
With his career as an Atlanta Falcon. He will be traded after this season to a contender that needs a quarterback. And the era of Michael Penix Jr. will begin after only 1 year.
I want to say that's not an overreaction.
I don't think it is either.
Yeah, the Falcons definitely have a Kirk Cousins problem right now.
They put themselves in this spot by doing it this way. Like, they created the narrative on their own. Whether there's any truth to it at all, the fact that you sign him and then draft Michael Penix eighth overall, like, they've done this to themselves.
Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, if they do trade away Kirk Cousins and Michael Penix turns out to be a stud, did they do the right move?
Did they make
the right move?
100%, yeah.
Which then in turn becomes so crazy to me, because everyone was scrutinizing them because you just signed Kirk Cousins to this massive deal and then you draft Michael Penix. to me, it almost be like a little flash of brilliance in a weird, a quirky type of way. But at the same time, you did spend a lot of money on a quarterback that didn't end up fitting your needs and taking advantage of a division that's very winnable right now.
Very winnable.
Yeah, so Kirk Cousins being traded, I feel like Atlanta's definitely going to look for suitors. Obviously, you can't cut him. I feel like I read somewhere that he doesn't really become a viable cut candidate until like 2026 because of the dead money.
Yeah.
He'd leave. So trading is basically the only option they have. But to find a contender that, and see, the thing is, I don't know how much compensation that Atlanta would take. Obviously, they already have a backup plan for QB. So honestly, a fifth round pick wouldn't even be that bad, to be honest with you. Take the money off my hands, get that contract out of here. I am happy if I'm Atlanta. Yeah.
And I mean, I read a report today. It's what made me think of this and write it down, like that. It's already out there that Atlanta is going to do this. And apparently, allegedly, it's already out there that Kirk Cousins would be open to it. And his only thing is, like, he wants to go to a contender. And so, right. Like, it's like the Giants and teams like the Raiders wouldn't fit that criteria. Now,
right.
Side note, as a Jets fan, I would trade the house for him. Because, I mean, I know on paper, like, record-wise, they're not a contender. But talent-wise, I think they are.
Is this biasy from the show that you saw last year, quarterback?
Maybe a little. Maybe a little.
I'm a cool dude. No, don't get me wrong. I'm
a Cousins fan.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think it'll be a very interesting off-season storyline to follow because they didn't draft him eighth overall and pay him all this money to ride the bench.
Right.
And the way it's appearing that the season is going to end for Atlanta. I mean, they could switch things up the last four or five games and look great, but they've lost, what, three or four in a row?
No.
Through four picks today?
Yeah, four picks.
So, I mean, it's not – things aren't terrific in Atlanta right now.
Yeah, no. Honestly, you probably set yourself up right if you're Atlanta with Michael Penix. And, I mean, like we were talking about it during the offseason, they have a good roster around them. They have the pieces around them. It's just about their quarterback play. It's just not what they expected it to be. But, yeah, I think Atlanta definitely has the position that they want, even though it's not working out the way they envisioned. But I feel like they have a backup plan that should work out for them.
Yeah, we'll see. And then my next one, Bryce Young is going to have a better career than Caleb Williams.
Oh boy.
So this one, number one really, overall pick. What's that?
Number one overall picks, the battle.
Yeah, back to back number one overalls. I mean, the season it's really been a tale of two seasons for both of these guys. Like you think about Caleb Williams really started out like early to the middle of the year playing well. And now obviously they've taken a dive, whereas been the exact opposite for Bryce Young. He started out dreadful, got benched, and the last two or three weeks has really come back and looked like a different quarterback. Right. I know they lost last week, they lost this week, but against the Chiefs and then against the Bucks, but it wasn't because of Bryce Young. No. I mean, they should have won this game today. Chuba Hubbard had a fumble on like the 25-yard line in overtime. They could have kicked a game-winning field goal, but he coughed it up, and then Tampa Bay ended up going down and scoring. So, I mean, Bryce Young played well enough to win the game today. And I mean, the touchdown he had to Austin Thielen with like 25 seconds left, stepping up in the pocket under pressure, throwing a dime. It was like 25, 30 yard touchdown. It was a very impressive throw. I kind of feel like he looks like a completely different quarterback. And I think that maybe those 5 or 6 weeks off, however long it was the best thing that could ever happen to him.
Yeah, it definitely looks like he's playing a lot more freely. It's like he's not, he doesn't have that weight of the pressure from that number one overall pick status that was hovering around him, especially all last year. I feel like he's always been trying to do too much and overcomplicating things. I feel like they definitely hit the reset button for Bryce Young, and it's definitely worked out for him. I have to look into his mind and wonder if seeing CJ Stroud kind of take a little bit of a regression has kind of helped him mentally as well. Like, hey, that's the guy that they said they should have picked over me, but right. Now he's struggling. See, everyone struggles. I feel like, I mean, not to kick a person when he's down like CJ Stroud, but bro, maybe that was a confidence booster for Bryce Young. Like, hey, not everyone just gets it just like that. It's a development curve. It's taking a step back and realizing that the coaches are there to help you and analyzing your playbook one step at a time. Because Bryce Young just looked lost out there. It looked like he was reading 10 different plays at the same time, and he didn't know which one was the one they were running. But yeah, I feel like that whole statement is a bit of an overreaction right now. Seeing as one is,
It's a juicy one.
It's a juicy one. It's definitely going to be talked about for maybe 5-10 years down the line. But yeah, Bryce Young is only in year two. He's finally starting to turn his career around, and Caleb Williams is what, 12 games into his career. Yeah. So it's definitely a spicy topic to come back to after like 5-10 years from now.
To be determined.
To be TBD. That's right. But Bryce Young, I'm happy for the kid.
Yeah, me too. Me too. All right, power rankings.
Power ranking. My top four haven't changed. The Lions at number one, Bills at number two, Eagles at number three, Chiefs at number four. Last week I had the winner of the Ravens and the Chargers take my number five spot, which ended up being the Ravens. But obviously they lost today. So I put the Packers at number five. I wanted to go with the Vikings initially, but I feel like the Packers are a little bit more hotter right now than the Vikings. The Vikings squeaked out a win against the Cardinals today. The Vikings are finding ways to win, which good teams do. I'm just not sure if they can find that same magic come the playoffs, and that brings me a little bit of hesitancy with the Vikings overall. The Packers, however, I feel like when they're on, they can definitely compete with the best of them.
Yeah. So I'll get to the Packers in a minute. So I had an epiphany while I was doing these power rankings.
Okay.
I still think the Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl. Okay. But right now they are not a top five team.
Ooh.
So they're gone of my top five.
You knocked them down.
After a win. Yes. They're completely, they're gone. So I got Lions, Bills, Eagles.
Okay.
Still have Minnesota number four, and I brought Green Bay up to number five.
That's interesting. Okay.
So no more Chiefs. I still think they're going to win the Super Bowl, but right now they're not better than any one of those teams I just mentioned.
Right.
So I feel like both things can be true, especially with the Chiefs. So I'm done putting them in the top five just because of their name.
I put them up there because of their record. They're 11-1.
Yeah, they're 11-1, but like very, very easily could be like 4-7. It's a
range of 11-1.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's this sort of like temptation to like read into like their close wins and whatnot that kind of forced my hand last week when I did the overreaction with the Chiefs being bounced in the first round. There's just something about the Chiefs that is never convincing enough to make you think, oh, that's a Super Bowl winning team, until you come to postseason and then they're competing with every single team and basically winning the game before the game even starts, because they're just there mentally because they've been so good for so long now. But yeah, the Chiefs, as of right now, I can understand why you knocked them out of your top five. I completely understand
it. Well, because think about it, right? And this is literally just now off the top of my head. Week one, Isaiah Likely was out by a toenail, right?
Nope.
Should have been a touchdown, could have lost that game. Week two, turnover on downs, they ended up getting a pass interference call. Game should have been over. Pass interference call, you can argue whether it was a, you know, whatever. Denver, right. Blocked field goal, should have lost. Carolina, down to the wire, could have lost. Vegas, should have lost. Like
twice.
Yeah, and I mean, Chiefs fans will say, well, that's what good teams do, they find ways to win, and there's truth to that to an extent, but right. Dude, they need to play so much better in the playoffs, and I think they will. Like, legitimately, right. I don't think it's blasphemy to say like their season starts in December.
Yeah, you know, I feel like they've been in like cruise control this entire time. Like, they haven't hit that notch that we've become so familiar with the Chiefs to hit. And they're just like going through the motions, and somehow they end up at 11-1, just going through.
It's ridiculous! It's crazy.
Day in, day out. Yeah, it's crazy.
All right, so we'll see if they crack my top five again, but right now they are not on it. So, all right, we will wrap it up as we always do with our picks.
Mm-hmm.
So, I actually gained a game on you this week.
You did.
So I went 2-1. Let me just go back here and look. My lock was the Bucks over the Panthers, which admittedly was anything but a lock. So funny story. I was doing this for the show, and I wrote it down with like 4 minutes left. They were up 20-16. I went to put my daughter to bed. I'm like, all right, I'll chalk this one up as a win. I'll say that I went 2-1 this week. I come back downstairs. It's 23-23 in overtime, and the Panthers are about to kick a field goal. So I scribble it out and I write my new, and I'm like, you know, oh, like, you know, like pissed off that I lost a game. And then the Panthers fumble, and now I had to go change it again and mark it back to the way it was. So I went 2-1. Bucks over the Panthers was my lock. My upset, I got completely wrong. I picked Tennessee over Washington, which was a disaster. I should lose -2 for that. And then game of the week, I picked the Eagles over the Ravens. So I got that one correct.
Yeah.
So 2-1 this week brings me to 13-20 overall.
Look at you go.
I know.
You go.
Climbing the mountain. One game at a time, baby. One game at a time. All right. Would you like to remind the listeners of your picks last week?
I will. I would like to. So my lock was the Chiefs over the Raiders, which, like yours, was not a definite lock.
We were sitting at dinner because you had already gotten your upset wrong on Thursday night of the Dolphins. So I'll spoil it. Your upset was the Dolphins over the Packers. You got that one wrong. Me and Christy and the kids went out to dinner Friday night, and I literally had my phone out getting ready to text you like, hey, you're 0-2 this week. You're 0-2 this week. And then, of course, the Raiders blew it.
It's all part of the plan. That's how I envisioned the game to end. But, I mean, yeah, like we talked about it last week. The Raiders are that team for the Chiefs that just give them fits for no apparent reason until they start playing. And it's just one of those things. But, yeah, I mean, the Chiefs pull it out for me to give me my one win of the week. So I'm happy about that. Yeah, my upset, like you said, Miami over the Packers. I bit the cheese and it was poisoned. There was mousetrap there. So that did not work out for me. And then game of the week, I picked the Ravens over the Eagles. It was a close game. It could have gone either way at any time. The Ravens, of course, I feel like play a little bit better against tougher opponents, and they kind of played to the level of their competition in ways. Obviously, for better or for worse. But yeah, I wasn't too disappointed or too surprised about the outcome. I'll take that L.
Yeah. All right. So our game of the week this week should be no surprise. It's going to be Packers at the Lions. Thursday night football, a phenomenal Thursday night game. 9-3 versus 11-1. Yep. So it's going to be a phenomenal game. I'm riding the hot hand right now. I'm taking the Packers. I picked the Packers over the Lions for the game of the week. I just think that the Lions the last couple weeks have come very, very close to losing. And the Packers are the complete opposite. They haven't even played their best football yet.
Yeah.
So the Packers, to me, are a scary team in the NFC overall. And Josh Jacobs, the last probably 3 or 4 weeks, has really kind of come into his own. And been a big reason why the Packers are playing as well as they are. So I'm riding the hot hand. I'm taking the Packers over the Lions. So that's my game of the week pick. My lock. This is not because I'm trying to be funny or trying to be, you know, whatever. I'm picking the Dolphins over the Jets. I really expect this game to be a blowout. I truly do. I think the Dolphins are going to just wax them. I think the Dolphins offense is way better than the Jets defense, and the Jets offense cannot keep up and match points with the Dolphins. I really I don't think it'll be close. I really don't. So that's my lock. And then my upset, I'm going with, I think this is not scientific, but I think that it should be. There's something about when a team fires their coach, the next week they come out and they play really hard. So I'm taking the Bears over the Niners.
Is that what happened with the Jets when they fired Saleh?
I mean, they lost, but they played well.
Oh, okay. I don't remember the game or anything.
Yeah, but I mean, it was the Monday night game against the Bills where they lost by a field goal.
Okay.
Well, I mean, if you go back and you look at when teams fire their coach.
No, yeah.
What they do the next week, it makes no sense. All of a sudden these teams like want to play better or want to play hard and like look like a decent team again.
I mean, it happened with my Saints. They fired Dennis Allen.
Yeah.
They reeled off 2 wins in a row. And today they didn't play their best football at all. I mean, their best football isn't that good anyway, but still they at least made it competitive against the Rams. Yeah, I hear you on that one. So for my picks, game of the week, honestly, I was leaning towards the Packers, and then I just looked at where it was. I saw it was in Detroit. I decided to go with the Lions. Honestly, if it was in Green Bay, I would have picked the Packers. To me, it was just home field advantage because I honestly did not know which way to lean between these two teams. That means someone's gonna gain or lose a game once more on this. For my lock, I got the Eagles over the Panthers. Obviously, the Panthers are not playing bad at all, but I feel like the Eagles are just too good of a team to falter against the Panthers right now. And then for my upset, I could not find really any solid, convincing upsets outside of the Bears and in San Francisco that you already picked. So I went with the Giants over the Saints. So I'm picking against my team just like you are.
Okay.
It's in New York. I feel like the Saints offense is just not capable of scoring too many points in these games anymore, especially with the loss of Taysom Hill. He got carted off the field today with a knee injury. His knee just bent in the wrong way. And I hope nothing goes is too great for that situation. I feel like the Saints are just not there, especially I felt like there's a little bit of hope to run the table after Darren Rizzi took over head coaching duties. But obviously with today's loss and Taysom Hill's loss, I feel like that's a little bit too much to overcome.
What are they, 5-7?
4-8.
Oh, the 4-8. Okay, yeah, never mind.
4-8. Yeah.
So I didn't actually say this, but because last week that moved you to 19-14. So you have a 6-game lead on me as of right now with what, 5 weeks to play?
15, 16, 17, 4 weeks.
There's an 18 week season now.
18?
Yeah. They play seven.
Excuse me?
Oh my God. # what do they know?
Oh, I know. Wait, wait a second. Oh, yeah, the math is checking out now. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's late.
That's so bad. So, yeah, 6 games up with 5 weeks left of games. So we picked again differently on the game of the week this week. So it could be a three game swing.
It could potentially be. I'm just trying to make things interesting.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
All right. That will do it for us this week. Also, I forgot to start off the show, but hey, go ASU.
Who are they playing?
Iowa State. Big 12 Iowa championship State. Game on Saturday at noon.
Okay. You right. going?
I'm not going to that, but I did tell Christy if they win and they make it into the college football playoff, I might have to go.
Ooh.
So I was trying to think of who – like where it could be and like the teams that aren't going to get the bye that will host a game, Notre Dame, Penn State, Ohio State, like those are all reasonable drives. And I have a good buddy who I used to work with and he's a diehard Notre Dame fan, season ticket holder. And I said, hey bud, I'm telling you right now, if somehow the stars align and ASU plays Notre Dame, you better be saving me a ticket. And he just laughed. So we'll see what that means. But yeah, Saturday at noon, man. I'm pumped. I can't believe that they are where they are. It's been a phenomenal, very phenomenal season.
Yep. Perfect.
So, all right. That all will right. be it for us this week, and we'll be back with you again to wrap up week 14 next week.
Awesome.
All right. Peace.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to What Did They Know podcast. Make sure to follow us on all of our social media outlets to see future episode details. And don't forget to send in any questions or topics that you want to see the guys discuss in their weekly episodes to come.